Okay, good. I can tell. I have this. So even though we don't hear the chimes, I can tell if somebody else called in from the website. So anyway, so are there any announcements? I have one kind of good news. We were under pressure the last few weeks to get a proposal, a budget and proposal into NOAA for sustaining clean activities, and that finally went in.
Yay!
And approved?
Well, it's I've not gone through NOAA before, but it's past the point of where, so I think in equivalent NSF terms, it's past the point where the program officer says yes, and it's to the point where the lawyers are looking at it and stuff like that.
That sounds
so
good.
So I think that this is all a good thing. It's just the last day I was getting phone calls, they were uploading, it had to be done before the 4th of July, so it was the 3rd, and I had all of my stuff, everything was in probably the 2nd, and then they had to upload the forms there, and they kind of want us to move things from one category to another, nothing that affect the content at all.
Right.
It just had to be where they were kind of trying to anticipate any legalese hiccups that could happen. And so all day long, I was getting phone calls and having to address all of these little tiny things. Anyway.
We love it.
So, but that is in, so we're really thrilled about that.
Yeah, that's...
And you beat the derecho.
The what?
The derecho that hit Washington, D.C.
Yep, I didn't have to deal with that, but, well, actually, it did affect Frank. I think it was the Friday before that all happened, and he did lose power for a while.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought it was after the
4th.
Okay. Yep.
No, it was, so he did lose power for a while in the midst. I had not quite submitted everything yet. I was still just having conversations with him about, well, should we talk about this or should we not talk about that? So,
mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Good work. So,
and so. Tamara, basically that allows us to sort of continue on, I guess, a little bit more with the clean collection. And probably also to sustain a little bit of work here in the Climate Literacy Network.
What it includes, the main thing is for a maintenance level of clean to maintain an ongoing review process, but at a very small level. So we don't have a lot of money to do a lot of resources.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to, I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to be putting out an email, and Linda, you'll be part of this already, but... an email where we want to identify groups that would be interested in being part of an iterative review process with our activities. And that would be under our current funding and the NOAA funding. And basically, it's that we've not done this before, so it's kind of a test run to figure out the process of doing an iterative review process. The other piece that it will cover at a low level is in order to maintain the quality of the existing collection is that on a rolling basis, we have to sort of relook at each resource and make a judgment. We've already tagged them with respect to whether they're cutting edge science, but if they become dated or if something becomes dated, we would go back to the authors and ask them to update it rather than try to find something new. If the author is out there someplace. If not, we would then seek to deaccession something. Mm-hmm. We would probably not eliminate it from the website. We would probably have a section called retired resources, and there would be some caveats about them because obviously not everything about them is bad. They just don't work as well as something new. So, I mean, I've done this in other projects too where something about the resource is not – will not allow it to be in the collection, and yet it was in the past, and we don't want to take away, if something's made it into the collection, we don't want to take away the fact that it made it into the collection, even though it doesn't reach that bar anymore. So either I think the first step would be to contact the developer, and if they're willing to update it, that's great. If they're not, they potentially have something better that could replace it, or we would just then take it out and try to find something else.
Yeah.
And that will also happen at a very low level. It's basically slow. But the reason to have this here is we want to maintain the quality of the collection, and then we want to have other efforts partner with us, like we attempted to do with the Climate Change Education Partnership projects, to leverage that. I'm also thinking that we will leverage the collection and write some larger scale NSF proposals that will make use of the collection in other ways. And so that will also help maintain the quality of the collection. So this funding is at a really low level. And Scott, with respect to the Climate Literacy Network, it would be maintained as a community as we're doing now. So it doesn't allow for any growth of any kind.
Yeah, that's what I want.
But so it's it is rather a low level of funding compared to what we've had so far, but we have a lot in place, so
yep.
We'll see.
Right.
We are also, let's see, what else? Oh, so people wanted to know about NSDL, or I can ask if anybody else has other things they wanted to announce. Okay, well, NSDL, so the Clean Project has been, it was first proposed as an NSDL project, and that's the National Science Digital Library. And then we were the next to the last year of funded new pathway projects. Mm-hmm. There was one more funded after us the following year. And then the funding at NSF for NSDL got cut.
Mm-hmm.
They no longer have a solicitation for NSDL. And the core services, what maintains the infrastructure at NSDL, is housed at UCAR in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And they got funding, I guess, about a year ago, well, a little bit less than a year ago now, to do NSDL Next Generation. And the idea was they transitioned, I think the infrastructure was originally housed at Cornell University and has now been, I believe, moved to UCAR.
Yep.
And then the other part of it was to create a next-generation collection, and in that they had particular pathway projects that were involved, and CLEAN has been one of those projects. I think there's four or five of them, mm-hmm. where they've put together a set of learning application readiness standards and resources, and they're so we're identifying resources within our collections that address all of these standards. Now, given the level
of
review.
Can you just take a step back and tell us what learning application readiness standards are?
Okay, it's actually, I could share, I can't really rattle off all of the standards, but basically, NSDL had a set of required metadata, but a lot of those resources, to understand that NSDL is different from CLEAN in that it didn't necessarily require any kind of review. The different pathway projects identify, whatever process an individual pathway project identified their resources, they became part of the NSDL collection. And so if you go to NSDL, you can find their entire collection. You can find the pathway projects, and I think there's 13 or 14 of them. And they're on various kinds of topics. There's one on applied mathematics. There's one on computer science. There's one on physics. I think it's physics and astronomy. One on chemistry. One on engineering. One on biology. And they're all completely different from each other. So the mechanisms by which they put things in their collections is totally different. So there's also one on SMILE is an informal science education one, and MSP is a middle school science one. So that sometimes they address a particular audience, sometimes a particular topic. There are also, there for about 10 years, there were NSDL-funded projects, and then the first few years, there were collection projects, and so you'll see those items in the collection. And one of those, one of the early funded projects, was my Earth Exploration Toolbook project, and that is a collection within NSDL. It's not part of the pathways. A lot of the resources in the Earth Exploration Toolbook are now in CLEAN because we had that review process. So, and as a result, NSEL, the number of things in the collection exploded. And it wasn't just projects. Like, Bora, if you had resources out there, you could have submitted them to be part of NSEL, even though it wasn't funded to be part of NSEL, if you so chose to do that. So it got to a point where the collection was so large, it was hard for anybody to really find anything useful. So in the clean collection, we have this rigorous review process, and have various ways of narrowing the collection so people can narrow down what they want easily. And so about 3 or 4 years ago, just about the time that the clean collection got funded, they went through a deaccessioning process. So they set up these some kind of standards for not necessarily the quality of the resource, but the extent of the metadata. So you couldn't just have a title and a URL, that you sort of had to provide some of the other materials, grade level addressed, use requirements, you know, what are the intellectual property rights. And there's a whole range of things that they began to require, and they sort of, took things out of the collection that didn't feel appropriate, things that had a lot of advertising they took out of the collection. But then they decided, all right, so now that they had done that, they wanted to identify resources that fulfilled these standards called learning application readiness. Now, I could tell you, just because you're all used to the clean collection, we basically address that completely. Every single resource in the collection fulfills the metadata requirement, and it's their metadata requirements. They're not necessary quality. It's not a review. It was a more straightforward way of identifying resources that had enough information around them to make them more useful to educators. And I don't really have them memorized. It's a number of page document, but it includes a lot of things. A lot of the kinds of things we have in the clean review process, but we just do the review also, if it's place based, if it's a regional kind of activity, if there are things about it that address underserved communities, if there's foreign language, it can indicate that. And I guess just about the time CLEAN went live, they started identifying collections that were learning application ready. And so as part of this, did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Without actually being able to give you the actual details of what the metadata are, but I can share that with you. I have the documents.
That's close enough.
So what they were trying to do in this, there was a number of efforts. There was something called the STEM Exchange, which was a conversation between NSDL and the OMB, the Office of Management and Budget for the Government, around trying to identify a collection that, and it wouldn't be just NSDL would be the science part of that. But they wanted to identify a subset of this vast collection of resources that reached this certain level of quality, which meant this learning application readiness. So they've partnered with a number of the Pathways projects. And I think for our collection, we're actually the only restriction we're making, because all of our resources, I think there was only one field that we didn't, I think it might have had to do with the intellectual property rights that we didn't already have in the. Scott, did we have that in the?
Yeah,
you've gone through it.
I'm guessing because we weren't creating our own resources, we didn't feel like we had to track the intellectual property. I don't know. I don't remember us actually talking too much about it.
Yeah. No, I don't.
Not in there.
Anyway. Go ahead.
I'm just saying it's not in there explicitly in our review.
Yeah, so I think that was the one field we might have had to add. Mm-hmm. And but because of the way they're defining what they want, in the clean collection, they're just going to include the learning activities as opposed to the videos and the visualizations, which I guess, don't really, I mean, I think that the learning application readiness is something that's ready to use. Now, videos and visualizations are ready to use, but they don't have that pedagogical scaffolding around them. So that may be why. And then, so Anna is going through the collection and identifying those things, and then they're being aligned with the Common Core standards for math and English language arts. Now, obviously, not all of that, that's not a criteria for being in and out. It's just being, it, for those for which it's appropriate, they're being tagged with any language arts standards or any math standards. So you can imagine that there's probably sections of the math standards that obviously are being addressed by some of our, you know, some of our learning activities. And if the learning activity requires any kind of writing, there's potential language arts standards that's suggesting. So and so that's taking place. And then the other piece of that's kind of ongoing. And then the other piece that they're trying to figure out, and it's the meeting that I'm going to be at on the 23rd and the 24th, is what happens after this funding runs out. You know, we've been lucky enough with CLEAN to have an interest from NOAA to want our resources to appear in the climate.gov portal, and so we're able to get sustaining funding. But they're trying to figure out, okay, what happens to NSDL now? How does it continue on with all the partnerships that it has with all of the NSDL-funded projects and beyond, and how can they continue to maintain it in terms of funding? Mm-hmm. And one model which I've suggested and they've started to explore is the ESIP Federation model. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with the ESIP Federation?
A little bit.
Okay. So this is an organization, so we're going to do a little sidetrack here. So
tell me, and that's the meeting you're going to next week, so it's perfect.
I'm going to the ESIP Federation meeting first. The ESA Federation, let me see if I can just sort of say this kind of briefly. About in 1995, the National Research Council developed a report for NASA with the recommendation that they find a mechanism by which to get their data, the scientific research data, out beyond the scientific community into other contexts, where education is just one of those contexts. Businesses could make use of earth science data also. And as a result of that, NASA had a solicitation and funded an initial 24 projects. And part of so each of the projects had something to do with doing something with the geoscience data, earth science data that they had, but they were also charged with forming this Federation of Earth Science Information Partners. That's ESIP, E-S-I-P, Earth Science Information Partners. I got involved very early. I was a very teeny subcontract on one of the projects with a colleague at Rice University, because I was at Rice University for 15 years before moving to Massachusetts. And to give you a sense of how tiny this was, I had $11,000 over 5 years. That was it. Tiny, tiny part.
How is it worth the paperwork? But where did it go?
I was part of a project called Museums Teaching Planet Earth. And I won't go into the detail about it, but my colleague who was the PI of that project is a space scientist. And while I was at Rice, I provided earth science kind of expertise. And they had developed these museum exhibits and these planetarium shows that made use of earth science data. And I did all the background work for the content on any of the earth science topics, and she did all the background work for the space science topic. So that was my involvement. But these 24 partners were charged with forming the federation, an organization. And so in the first 2 years, they developed a constitution and bylaws. Mm-hmm. And in the constitution and bylaws, it put in place a mechanism by which other partners could join. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, I applied to have Turk join. Part of the reason is that most of the organizations were science organizations that had science data that were in desperate need of, you know, an educational expertise and outlet. So I thought this was a great opportunity for partnering. And I've mentioned the Earth Exploration Toolbook. It was through my running the education committee at the ESA Federation that we developed the first partnerships that were the Earth Exploration Toolbook project at the beginning. So what happened was is that they, in the Constitution and bylaws, they had all of these standing committees and administrative committees, and I was trying to get an education committee, they didn't have an education committee. They had a community outreach committee, community engagement committee, mm-hmm. a products and services committee, a technical infrastructure committee, and one other I can't remember right now. But they and I tried to get education on the into the mission statements of the committees, and I was told they were on the mission statements of all of the committees, or they were in the mission of all the committees. Well, as a result, as you might imagine, they were actually on none of them.
Yeah.
And so a few years later, I became part of the community outreach, community engagement committee, formed a subgroup on education, and then a few years later, we managed to get a standing committee on education. And I was chair of it for a very long time. And so I kind of moved the education piece of the ESA Federation forward. And what's happened? Well, what happened after that was that they formed it. The ESA Federation now has 130 organizations. It grew from that initial 24. And they formed it. Then NASA funded a central office for a couple of years. In the meantime, we formed this Foundation for Earth Science, which was a mechanism by which it was an organization that could submit proposals and take money. The Federation itself is just this loose federation of individual organizations, where the Climate Literacy Network is a federation of individuals. The ESA Federation was a federation of organizations.
Yep.
But there was no place where the Federation could be funded. You could just, an individual organization could apply for funds, but it became very complicated. So when, in those initial years, when there was an education committee or a community engagement committee that had funds to run the activities of the committee, it was just added as a supplement to that organization's NASA-funded project.
Okay.
And then they had to somehow keep that money separate. And it got really complicated when the first chair of the community engagement committee, when he stepped down and I became chair, in order for me to get reimbursed, it had to be approved first by the chair, and then it had to go through his organization, even though he wasn't involved anymore, because that's where the money was.
Yes.
It got very, very complicated. So they formed a 503C organization called the Foundation for Earth Science. And it's very efficient because it only has two employees. It has the executive director and a director of outreach.
Mm-hmm.
And they're distributed. They have no home. They don't have an office anywhere. They work out of their homes, but they do manage all of these efforts. So any time that I need a venue where one of the things we did for the Earth Exploration Toolbook, we brought together teams to create, to have them have a meeting to create a chapter, we could use the venue of the ESA Federation meetings to bring those people together, so that way we didn't have to develop all the logistics of a meeting.
Right.
You use their logistics.
Meeting.
The meetings occur twice a year.
Yeah.
The one is in early January, right after the new year, in Washington, D.C., to take advantage of being able to connect to all the funding agencies. And all these people can come because they don't have to travel. They just take a few hours and go to the meeting and do a presentation or interact or whatever. And then the summer meeting is always the third week of July and moves around the country, and we have a teacher workshop, and so we engage most of the teachers that are local to the particular region. This time it's going to be in Madison, Wisconsin. And so that model of how, so then the executive director of the foundation and the other person she works with, the elected president and vice president and so forth, I was vice president for a couple of years, put together proposals and get the federation funded to do activities that are collaborative across the federation. So one option I had when we were going to put the proposal together for the CSEP Phase 1 funding, if I don't know if you remember, but and I guess it was true this time also, you could not any one organization could only submit one proposal. So that if you at your organization had two PIs who were interested in submitting, the organization had to choose. And I did have some competition here at Turk, and I actually contacted the Federation and asked if I could submit as the principal investigator from the Federation, which they said yes. And the real requirement is that it's not just a pass-through, that you actually make use of the Federation and the partnerships and committees there. So it's a very good structure. It's a very open environment. It's a neutral environment so that the funding agencies can all see that they can come there and share, and you're not on anybody's turf. So you're not on NASA's turf, and you're not on NOAA's turf. Right now, they have funding from NASA, NOAA, and EPA, are the three organizations that fund various activities for the Federation. So NSDL is looking to see if they can make use of this kind of structure to see how to move forward. The major difference that between the two organizations is that NSDL has a tremendous infrastructure. You're not funding just a central, quote, office of two people. You know, that's really a huge operation. That's why I'm going to the meeting next week.
In 2 weeks.
Is to see how we can move that forward so that NSDL. So it's in the Clean Pathways interest for NSDL to continue in some way. And it's, I think, to everybody's interest for NSDL to continue in some way because of the vast amount of resources there. Now, the resources aren't vetted in the same way as clean resources are. Each pathway did their own thing with respect to reviewing them. I mean, even the Earth Exploration Toolbook, we did our own review. I mean, it did go through a separate clean review later, but when we developed the chapters, we not only did an internal review of chapters when they were first developed, and then we sent them out to external review, but not in the way like a peer review journal. A peer review journal, you send it off to somebody, an editor, and the editor picks the reviewers. Well, we didn't have that structure in place. So Earth Exploration Toolbook chapters were reviewed by external people who had nothing to do with the project. But a lot of these pathway projects use different mechanisms, did not review, that have other ways of deciding what was going to be in their collections and what wasn't.
So, Tamara, is there sort of any interest in kind of creating some sort of uniformity, or is this just so vast and complex that that kind of review process would just get in the way? Do you see what I'm getting at?
I don't think that we could even attempt to do that. partially because, you know, there's a matter of stepping on everybody else's toes.
Yeah.
And some of them are very well. So Kim Lytle's MSP portal, a lot of what she does is facilitate these communities of middle school teachers.
Yes.
And I've kind of envied her ability to really engage these teachers on such an ongoing basis, but she has little groups within the portal. There are discussion groups that are active, and so she's managed to, so it's just a very different kind of portal. One of the things that we did when we first started Clean was we went to each of the pathway collections, and part of our looking for resources was to identify the resources in the Clean Pathway, in the NSDL pathway collections that would be relevant to review through the Clean process. And it didn't matter if they had any kind of review before. One of the pathways projects is Teacher's Domain. That's WGBH's project. It's mostly media. There's a lot of resources in Clean now from Teacher's Domain. And they have their own collection, and it's much broader than those. Because ours, our other cut was things had to address either climate literacy essential principles or energy literacy principles.
Right.
So so not everything in Teachers Domain is obviously part of Clean. But we did purposely go to each of the, and I think about a third of our advisory board are people from the other pathway projects that were most relevant to Clean. So we tried to identify, yes?
I'm sorry. When you keep referring to Pathway Project, are you saying that all of that curriculum that is housed at NSDL was originally an NSF Pathway grant, that type of funding?
No. The Pathway Projects, a good fraction of it is now, because there was a lot of required. So when NSDL first was first being funded, they had collections projects, service projects, and targeted research projects. And so, as I said before, the Earth Exploration Toolbook was funded as a collections project. But then what happened is that they kept getting more and more collections, and then things were just, you know, kind of not, you know, after the funding was over, there was no way to, it was just a lot of individual collections that had no real focus. So after, I think, maybe four years sounds about right.
Are you there?
Yeah, did we lose Tamara?
It's a very specific meaning. You'll hear about Pathway Projects in other NSF solicitations. It means different things. So, but in the context of NSDL, what it meant was that you weren't developing new resources, you were stewarding a collection of existing resources. And then the proposals then defined what they meant by stewarding these resources.
Uh-huh.
For CLEAN, that meant identifying which ones address the climate literacy essential principles or energy literacy principles and putting them through a rigorous review process, and then maintaining them over time. But for other collections, that process could be different. So one of the collections, and I forget what it is, it basically uses Second Life, you know, online avatars and that kind of stuff. And so at the NSDL meetings, they would want to have a poster session in which they wanted all of our posters that we submitted to NSDL in Second Life, and you could be your little avatar and walk around and look at the posters in this virtual world. So that's one kind. And then I mentioned KIMS, and some of them included professional development. KIMS, which is the middle school portal, has a big interaction with educators. WGBH, I don't know if they had a lot of. Teachers' Domain is I think you can register. You register for free, but they do have people register. So, and they, I think they do have courses on how to use different parts of it. But their main thing was to create the collection, and the collection was that they already had the media pieces. So what they did was they. Because early on, before on any of these NSDL projects, I helped them with some of these things. They have essays that go along with the media pieces to give them a little bit more pedagogical scaffolding, and then sometimes links to other things. They don't actually create activities, but they just provide a context for the media piece, about a summary of what it's about, and maybe a broader context within which it might fit. So it gives educators a little bit more understanding of how they might use these media pieces. And they weren't in the CLEAN collection until we opened it up to videos and visualizations, because it doesn't have the level of scaffolding that we required for activities. So it was quite wide-ranging. But there were a lot of other NSDL-funded projects. So it wasn't all just the pathways. Like I said, there's only 14 pathways. And to give you a sense of the difference, the pathway projects were a whole lot larger in size in terms of dollars. And they started having meetings separate from the meetings, meaning mostly virtual. I think we had teleconferences every other week or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I said, there's only 14. And I believe that there's probably close to 200 funded and NSDL projects other than the pathways over the period of 10 years that it was in existence.
Wow.
So I don't remember exactly how you might have gotten something into NSDL, but another front of project, we have an Earth Labs project. It's our high school curriculum. This was not, it's a DR K-12 project, Discovery Research K-12, but it is a curriculum material. And so what we've done now, they have an accessioning board for NSDL. So you submit all the documentation they need about a collection, and then this board determines whether or not it gets to be an NSDL. And so we have now submitted all that paperwork, and I think in August the successioning board is supposed to meet and determine if Earth Labs will now become an NSDL collection. So it was never funded as an NSDL project, but anybody can submit that about any collection of materials or resources that they have can submit that and have it be considered to be part of NSDL.
Okay, good.
So,
sounds like there's a real effort to continue this. I mean, that was what I was kind of, the basis of my question was
concern.
And I know several years ago that there had been sort of a loss of funding, and it sounds like there was certainly a desire to keep going in some ways.
Yeah, well, I still have this follow-up funding where it wasn't a separate solicitation. The core group that handles the infrastructure got a year and a half worth of funding, I think, due to the transition. And the rest of the pathway projects, I think most of them are over because, like I said, we were funded the year before they stopped funding NSDL, and our funding officially ends December 31st,
mm-hmm.
and we'll probably get a no-cost extension, but it won't take us very long. I think it'll only take us a few months. But then we're going to have this follow-up funding from NOAA.
Yep.
The one other one is the CPOM project in Florida. That was funded the year after we were, so it might go another year.
Right.
But there's been no more NSDL, all NSDL meetings. That has ended.
Right.
I don't know if most of you remember DLEESI, the Digital Library for Earth Systems Education. This was about a year precursor to NSDL, and the funding ended for that, you know, sort of on this, you know, a few years before. Well, let's see, the last year we had an annual meeting was 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And the funding ended for that, and they worked really hard to find a transition, and what they ended up doing was they cut a lot of the services that they had in terms of engagement with the community, and they house it now at UCAR as part of their library services. And you can ask for something to be accessioned into DLEESI, but they have it's just there. You can go search it, and it actually did. There were two efforts that ended up are now listed as pathway projects that were not funded in that way and never received NSDL dollars, and one of them is DLEESI. And the other one is the Teach the Earth site from Kathy Manduka's Teach the Earth site, which has a cutting-edge project. And actually, that's where the Earth Exploration Toolbook and Clean are housed,
mm-hmm.
is in Kathy's. So the Teach the Earth site and DLEESI are both identified in the list of pathway projects but never received those kinds of dollars for that effort. Those were funded by other mechanisms.
Great.
So I would like to see NSDL be a little bit more vigorous of a community than DLEESI has been. Basically, DLEESI is now just listed as a pathway project. It has no independent
mm-hmm.
real activities except for the people who are curating the libraries at UCAR.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the NSDL story as far as I know it at this point.
That was the brief version?
Yeah, well,
that was good history.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, it's important to realize. I mean, these collections have been extraordinarily helpful. So, I mean, what we can do in Clean, you know, much of that could not have happened without all the preceding work developing those resources. So that was actually why my question was coming there. Is sort of Clean in some ways has provided that review function. Not just the collecting, but the review of the content of it. And back of my head.
Well, there was one of the complaints about DLEESI early on, especially really early on, was how did they want to build a collection? And the question was, do we go for quantity or quality?
Yes.
And the initial effort, because there was so much that had to go into building the infrastructure, they wanted there to be something to look for. You know, so they kind of went, and then there was the question was whether we have two parts of DLEESI, one be a reviewed collection and the other be a what they called a broad collection.
Yes.
Other things that were not reviewed but would be available.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was the review process is so expensive that was never built into anybody's funding, and so it became, and they did build what was called a community review process, mm-hmm. but that depended on, so they built it and put it in place, and what that depended on is if you went and you found a resource and you really liked it, that you would then go back in and create a review of it. Kind of like, you know, on Amazon, but in Amazon you just have to write paragraphs. Here this was this long questionnaire about you, the resource that would provide, but the problem was that hardly anybody went back and did that.
Yeah.
So there was another effort to review resources in DLEASI. They identified subsets of DLEASI, and they developed a panel review kind of mechanism that didn't have the review criteria that we have in CLEAN.
Right.
What it had was the people that organized it basically set up a panel. We had one here at Turk that I was on, Luann was on. We had a couple of scientists, and we were given a group of resources where, just like a panel review, I mean, just like our panel review, but instead of having the benefit of anything, basically of the maybe 15 resources, I would have to present three that I would review in detail and then present it to the rest of the panel. But the entire outcome was just the discussion of the panel. So there was no standardization of it because my panel, I would, you know, we had a 2.5 day meeting, and we had 4 or 5 people on the panel, and the next one would have been in another state with 4 completely different people that had a different perspective. And so I think in the Teach the Earth site, they did know if that group's reviewed it, the level to which it reviewed, and I think they gave it a qualitative rating of excellent or good or something. I don't remember the exact words, but it kind of, so that if you went into Kathy's Teach the Earth site, any resource that was reviewed through that process would have the indication of what the outcome was of that review. But that was it. It was just the statement of what level to which it reviewed. It didn't give you any of the kind of context from the review process that we do for CLEAN. And so it was all of those activities that, and the complaints that NSF have about the quality of the DLEASI collection that led to the way we defined the CLEAN pathway proposal to begin with, is like, I'd say at least 80-85% of it was all dedicated to the review process.
So, I'm going to have to drop off. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I hope this was helpful. I did most of the talking today.
It's good. I'll get back to you, too. Thanks.
Okay. Very good.
No, it's very good. It's very helpful to have that background, Tamara. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Good. Well, are there any questions or any other topics people would like to discuss?
I have a quick little question. At least I'm just looking for a quick little answer. Kim Lytle's middle school project portal, you mentioned the middle school discussion groups that she has.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me, are they just online, asynchronous kinds of things?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
Maybe that part, yeah.
I don't think she has any face-to-face meeting. And Kim...
Well, or phone call or verbal.
I don't think so.
Okay.
But, I mean, everything, I mean, one of the things that Kim did an amazing job of is she made use of every free collaborative tool you could ever find.
She knows it all.
And she used all of the services that NSDL had to offer to enable that also.
Yeah.
So that her technical infrastructure overhead is relatively small. So I mean, in the number, in all the times that I've talked to Kim, I believe it's been all these asynchronous collaborative tools. She used Ning and Dingo and a whole lot of them. She's amazing. And the two other projects she has, one is Beyond Penguins and Polar Bears, which, just like the Earth Exploration Toolbook, won the Science Prize for Online Resource and Education.
Mm-hmm.
And
what is it?
Beyond Penguins and Polar Bears.
Yeah.
On Penguins and Polar Bears.
Beyond Penguins and Polar Bears. And the other one is, I want to say Beyond Weather and Climate, but I'm not 100%
sure. Something like that, yeah. It was definitely on weather and climate.
And both of these are elementary-level resources.
Yeah.
That I've been thrilled to provide to my brother-in-law for my niece and nephew, who are now, I guess, 6 and 4 years old. Because what they did is they put together little magazines that are online. They're online magazines, so they don't publish anything on paper, but you could download it and print it if you wanted to.
Yep.
And it addresses various science topics. I don't remember exactly what they are. I know the climate and weather one is newer.
Yes.
And the last time I looked, they hadn't finished all their magazines. They had a plan, basically had a plan out of how many magazines they were going to do, and they were doing one a month.
Yes.
So.
It's great material.
Yeah, it's really good for the, I mean, there's not a, if you were looking for content for little kids in NSEL, the middle school portal is middle school, but these other two projects, the Beyond Penguins and Polar Bears, and I think one's K through 5 and one's K through 2. Okay. There's not a whole lot of really good resources for those age levels.
Yep.
Because the basic of need understanding is limited. They need more to learn to read.
Great resource.
Hey, thanks.
Okay.
Good. So we're going to have Tamara at the top of the hour, last hour, talked about obviously not being around for the next 2 weeks. So if anyone still on the line has some topics for the next 2 weeks, just please send me a email. The easiest one is at scarleyxq.com. Use the letter Q. And
yep.
And we'll have those discussions in the next 2 weeks.
Terrific.
Excellent.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, everyone.
Great. And thanks, Tamara.
Okay.
Holding forward. It's great. Super. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.